Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Happy Inauguration Day, Brittany.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Joining us right now to talk about that and lots of other stuff, we've got Buck Gino back from Work in Progress Radio.
God love you, Angela, but I don't feel very happy about it.
I know. I'm trying. It's pretty fake.
But it's
but
always
I'm
a pleasure to be with you ladies. We enjoy it very much. It's a pleasure, actually.
We enjoy having you. And you brought a guest with you today.
Yeah, I have John Rurink. John's with the Michigan Information and Resource Service out of Lansing. They are, I'll let him explain it, but they're kind of a watchdog over the state government. John, welcome to the show again. Always, we appreciate you being on.
Well, thank you for having me, Buck. It's always fun to talk to you guys and talk politics and talk Michigan.
Well, anyway, tell us about your organization, as always, and how we connect with it.
Absolutely. We're online at MERSnews.com. We have a group of five journalists we have covering the State House, State Senate, the courts, and the administration. We track all the bills that move through the Michigan legislature, and we try to keep our clients, which are governments, unions, corporations, and agencies, informed about everything that has anything to do with Michigan government.
And I imagine you're pretty busy at all times.
We stay fairly busy. Yeah, it's starting to pick back up again with the State of the State this week. It sort of marks the beginning of the new session and, you know, lays out the agenda for what's going to happen in the next couple of months. Kind of like a kickoff in a football game, if you will.
There you go. Well, we've kind of had a little bit of a kickoff today, actually, right, on a national level.
We did. I skipped lunch today to watch the speeches and all the pageantry over in Washington, D.C., and now it looks like there's a lot of protesters getting arrested.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was looking at they're going all over the country. And I guess there's bigger ones tomorrow, right, with the women's march.
Yeah, I guess they're expecting for the supposedly the Million Women March. I think there's similar protests going on. I think we're expecting one here in the Capitol.
Yeah, I was talking to the ladies that are going down, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't think we've, at least in my time, obviously we're kind of always have been for quite some time, a 50-50 split almost in the country, but I haven't seen this kind of a protest before. We'll have to see how that goes and how the president reacts to it, because, you know, he's one of those, like it or not, he's one of those knee-jerk reaction kind of guys, it seems like, and we'll see how it goes. I'm warming up my Twitter finger, John.
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, just kind of on a day like today, even if you didn't vote for him, you kind of got to hope that everybody settles down a little bit and gives him a chance to at least get a hold of the job and start to work and tackle some problems. I think that would probably put everybody at ease if you just saw some things start to happen.
Yeah, and if right, and like I said, it's just an interesting time. Like I said, democracy has prevailed in a lot of issues, and it will this time, depending on, like I said, I just hope that that everybody, I just hope that everybody kind of curtails from the violence, because, you know, protesting's great.
Yeah.
The part that's disturbing.
Absolutely. I mean, making your message known and, you know, marching and having the banners is fine, but, you know, throwing things at police officers, and that's not part of the democratic system. That's part of a different system, and we don't really want to revert to that as a country. I know I certainly don't.
You mentioned the State of the State address. So give us your thoughts on that and what we can expect maybe for the listeners in Michigan and around the country.
Well, it was a pretty good speech. He usually does an okay speech. He's an interesting speaker. He never really writes it out like you or I would. I would probably write the whole thing out and just about memorize it, and we do it, you know, repeat it over and over again. He actually goes from an outline, it's always interesting to watch that process. It was kind of what I expected. He is in this is his seventh State of the State address. He will have one more in his tenure before he kind of does what Barack Obama did today and kind of fade off into the sunset. He got a little bit of flack because he didn't spend very much time talking about Flint. I think he spent about a minute and a half, and I think he brought it up about halfway into the speech. I kind of expected that he would do that for a couple of reasons. Not that Flint isn't important. Clearly, the state's appropriated almost $250 million to address the issue, and they, you know, there's prosecutions that have happened and that are ongoing related to that case. But in a lot of ways, for his legacy, he needs to start moving away from Flint and moving on to other topics. This is one of, actually, this is the biggest, the state of the state is always the biggest platform a governor has to sort of lay out his vision and lay out his what his tenure is about. Mm-hmm. He'll only have one more chance to do that before he leaves. So I really expected him to kind of not spend nearly the amount of time he did last year on Flint, and that's kind of what he did. So,
well, this is actually right around 1,000 days, right, since they've had clean water.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's you know, and the tough thing about the Flint case is the test results are starting to show improvement. They have what they call sentinel testing sites around the city. They're getting into the mid to high 90s in terms of water falling within the federal guidelines. But, you know, one of the toughest decisions they're going to have to make as a city and the state is when do you sort of green light it, and who makes that decision? And, you know, that's kind of going to be interesting for me to watch as we go forward. I mean, is it when you get to 99%? Is it when do you have to get to 100%? How long do you have to be at 100%?
Right, right.
So,
well, like I say, it's, and I think we can all agree, it's been way too long. It's probably something that shouldn't happen, but it's we need to fix it. And then we need to support the people that have the you know, the long term effects too. That's going to be another issue down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's interesting that you know, you were talking about that, and I was reading a piece, and I was going to get your opinion on this. The governor is not quite too sure that he wants to repeal all the Affordable Care Act, correct? He talked a little bit about the Medicaid expansion and how he'd like to keep that, correct?
Right, right. And that's one of the big questions with the whole Trump administration. It's something that that we talked to him about when we interviewed him. Michigan has 640,000 people that were added to the Medicaid program as part of the Affordable Care Act. They expanded who was eligible for Medicaid, and that's part of the effort of the Affordable Care Act, or some call Obamacare. That's the way they reached, you know, a higher insurance rate. They reached down, kind of extended it to more people. And the governor would like to see that continue. The state has seen its uninsured rates decline. That's something good, you know, having all those people have insurance, that's something good. And his other concern, to be completely honest with you, I think, is we have these 640,000 residents that now have Medicaid. If the federal government takes away expanded Medicaid, the state can't afford it, to be completely honest with you. I don't think there is. I think it would come into the tune of about $3 or $3.5 billion, if I remember right. And there just isn't the revenue there. And I would be very surprised if you get the political will to raise the taxes to support that program in the absence of federal funding.
We've talked about this several times, but I don't think you and I have. But there's a lot more. You know, the uninsured people is obviously a great concern, but there are a certain amount of jobs that are created because of this too, also, right?
Well, certainly, yeah. There's there is. Obviously, the more people you have getting regular care through office visits, the more healthcare personnel you're going to have to support those people getting the care that they should be getting. So certainly, there's an economic and jobs impact related to the Affordable Care Act,
and that would be even less revenue to the state then.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, and the tough part is, I think it's hard to tell, but if you listen to sort of the rhetoric, you always have to look at how it changes. And I think they're starting to realize, the Republicans and D.C. are starting to realize that they have to be very careful with this repeal and replace for a couple of reasons. Politically, their constituents have bought into repeal. And so they have to do something that signifies to their supporters that they have done that. But politically, they also can't afford to kick millions of people off health insurance. So, you know, how you get to a solution where you can say to your supporters, yes, we repealed it and we replaced it, and then say to the people that need it, this is a better system and this is why. It's a tall order.
Yeah, I was amazed, John, you know, about the number of people that kind of came forward and were actually Trump supporters and actually were questioning the repeal. And a lot of these people were had insurance through the Affordable Care Act. And you know, you heard everything from, you know, well, we didn't think you really meant it, or we didn't think it was going to happen. And like you said, that, you know, the conservatives have bought into the fact that everybody's went around Washington and has promised to repeal this, so now they have to do something to show that they've at least accomplished that. Now,
right.
If they can get
better
something better,
the
then, you know, we'll all
remember,
benefit.
The Democrats would love to have the Republicans own this issue.
Sure.
I mean, they would love to see Obamacare turn into Trump care, and all of a sudden the Republicans have to, you know, drag it around their neck for a while.
Right, right. Well, John, we got to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion on Michigan and what's going on and with the Affordable Care Act, and also we'll talk about some of the Senate bills that are going to be put forward earlier or coming up here soon in a couple weeks. This is Buck Gino, and you've been listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top!
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Roosey, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Roosey. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Picture two employees at the same company doing the same job. One speaks English, gets paid fairly, and receives health benefits. The other speaks Spanish, gets paid less than half, and receives zero health benefits. That's an injustice no matter where you work, and exactly how Telemundo's performers are treated at NBC Universal. It's time to end this double standard and demand fair treatment for all performers, not just those who speak English.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in and joining us today. We hope that we've made your day a little bit better. And to help us close things out, we've got Buck Gino back of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, ladies. We enjoy participating in the program.
And we love you too, Buck.
All right.
You've got always a guest.
We have... Also, we have John Rink with us today. John's with the Michigan Information and Research Service out of Lansing, Michigan, a watchdog group set up to keep an eyeball on what's going on in Michigan. John, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome, as always. I like talking with you guys on the weekend or on the Friday. I shouldn't say weekend. It's not weekend yet. We're getting close.
Getting close, that's right. Unless you're retired, my weekend will start here in about 10 minutes.
I've got another hour, 2 hours.
Yeah. I'm looking forward. Are you going to be up this year for the games?
I think we are, yeah.
Okay.
I think we are.
Good.
Looking forward to it.
John, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is I know this is one of the things that are near and dear to my heart and probably to a lot of people that work in the building trades. I see that Senator Mikoff has brought up again, it looks like Senate Bill 1 and 2 and 3 or whatever how they pronounce it, the repealing of prevailing wage. And I'm guessing, I'm trying to understand, maybe you can help me out. I believe that the voters voted that down in 2015. And I was kind of curious to, and even the governor was a little bit squeamish about that because he's been crying for, you know, to basically, a call basically for more skilled help. And I'm one of those people that think, well, if you're looking for skilled help and you don't want to pay them, you're not going to find them.
Right.
And so I'm guessing what drives the Republican side of the aisle to drive these issues, even though they weren't popular at the ballot box?
Right. This one never made it to the ballot box.
Okay.
They were gathering petition signatures. They failed to get enough signatures to secure a spot on the ballot. It was an effort that had to do with the Associated Builders and Contractors, which is, for lack of a better word, I think it's kind of an association of generally private construction companies. And these construction companies really want a chance. Most of them are non-union. They really want a chance to be able to bid on school projects and government projects. But as you know, prevailing wage says these projects have to pay the same rate as a union position would pay. I think Arlen, Meekhoff, Senate Majority Leader, has had this as one of his underlying objectives since he was a township official, from what I understand. He felt that the township was wanting paying more for its projects than maybe it needed to in terms of the construction costs, and he kind of blamed prevailing wage. Now, the governor said, he said it 2 years ago, this is the second time in a row that Arlen has made prevailing wage the early bill, the first bill. And I think the governor said 2 years ago, he said, I didn't support the repeal of prevailing wage in my first 4 years. I'm not going to support it in my next 4 years. So I think he's been pretty clear on it. I think it's just one of those issues that the majority leader would really like to see get passed. It passed the Senate last session. It kind of stalled in the House. We have a different speaker. Some people have argued that the group of members we have in the Michigan House is going to be even more conservative this cycle. So we'll have to see if it goes anywhere in the House. If it does, then it becomes a question of how committed the governor is to his opposition to the bill. He has said, so you got to take him at his word, and he's not going to support it. But then again, you know, things can change.
Sure.
If you recall, right to work was quote unquote not on his agenda. He did later wind up signing it. So if the majority leader and the speaker are determined to do it, they'll probably have a shot to make a good case for it and maybe hold something else out of reach of the governor until he agrees to what they want. So, I mean, it's certainly, I wouldn't give it very high odds, but it's a possibility.
It seems like we've been having this discussion. Well, it does. It seems like I've been having this discussion since I've been in the workforce, and it's been quite a while. And I just don't understand. You know, there's study after study, and you can get any study you want that shows that it drives the price. But it also gets studies that show, you know, the only thing that really matters is the prices. And I can tell you that, you know, the price for the jobs that say to build a school really don't change that much. The only thing that changes in that fact is that people get paid less. And you know, because you put it honestly, a piece of pipe costs the same whether you're buying it as a non-union or a union shop. And and I always wondered why the ABC or their affiliates or the people that are involved with them don't go about it the right way. They're all sent these surveys about every 10 years about what the wages are and what their wages are. And obviously, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that they outnumber the per se union contractors, so they could drive the prevailing wage if they chose to. It's just that they're basically lazy and taking the easy way out. Like I said, I just don't see how, like I said, you can't make a call out for skilled help and then say, okay, by the way, we're going to pay you less money. I just don't see how it works. So hopefully we'll hold the governor to his word.
Well, and, you know, if he holds to his word, I wouldn't be surprised if he...
Right, because
there are other parts of the business community that supported it, too. Wind up funding another petition drive. They just kind of botched the first one.
Right. So is there anything else we should be that they're going to bring up here in the next few months that we should be aware of? Probably a lot of things, though.
Well, I spoke to both the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the House after the State of the State and asked them what they're going to be taking up early.
Mm-hmm.
And they both agreed that there are a series of correction reform bills that they're probably going to take up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are aimed at kind of lightening the prison load that the state carries.
Mm-hmm.
And different changes. Another one that is going to likely come up in the Senate, if you'll recall, at the very end of session, there was an effort. We called it TIF on steroids. They called it like a transformational tax credit,
mm-hmm.
and it was aimed specifically at Detroit. I think there's a major Gilbert project going down there where they would be able to capture some of the new income taxes that were generated to fund these large development projects that would, quote-unquote, transform otherwise brownfield areas. The Senate, I think, is preparing to move that again. The governor was kind of hesitant to do it. It sounds like he is coming around. He did mention it briefly in his speech. So I think there may be a movement on that.
Another thing, John, while we got a few minutes here, what's the really? I know there's a movement or discussion about getting rid of the income tax. What's the feeling about that?
I think there's going to be, to be honest with you, I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. It could go somewhere if all the parties involved agreed to expand the sales tax to services,
mm-hmm.
and increase the level of the sales tax. But you cannot just repeal a tax that supports the state government to the tune of $9 billion, and a good chunk of that goes to schools, too.
Mm-hmm.
A big chunk of it is our general fund, without any replacement. I mean, we have reports that have already shown we've underinvested in our infrastructure in the state
mm-hmm.
to the tune of about $4 billion a year over the last 20 years. We are the third. We rank third among the states in terms of the biggest slide or drop-off of infrastructure spending between 2000 and 2016. We're almost at the bottom in terms of the dollars we invest as a state in our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why Republicans want to do that. I think it's kind of innate to their view of the economy and government. But on the other hand, we have to have a government provide good roads and education.
That's right.
And the infrastructure that we all kind of depend on.
Yeah, it's really hard to replace that amount of money without any plan to replace it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, John, thanks again. And like I said, this is John Roerink. He's with the Michigan Information and Research Service. And we connect to your organization how?
You can find us online at MIRSNEWS.com, MIRSNEWS.com.
John, we
thank
you for your input, and we really value your participation on the program. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
That being said, for Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, Laura Weens, I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.